Greetings, friends. I am Attentive Grandpa, and you've just tuned into a podcast from The Mighty Archives, featuring Simon's Tale by Daniel Bold. This week we have Chapter 2, The Graveyard. Oh my. For more from The Mighty Archives, including illustrations and video, visit our website, themightyarchives.com. Okay, here we go.
The word rang through Simon's ears for the rest of the morning, but the more he thought about it, the less he understood it. Enitzad, freak. He paced down the road on all fours towards the graveyard with the sun coming up over his shoulder. He passed by a few other lions, some out for walks with their families, others headed out to hunt in the savannah in small prides. No one looked at him. Was it because they thought he was a freak? Simon experimented by raising his paw to greet an older couple. They looked up, smiled, and waved back. It helped ease his mind a little bit, but Simon still felt confused. The graveyard loomed into view, but he didn't notice it until he was standing right at the edge. Simon was by nature a very curious lion, but he greatly preferred the physical world to the twisted wilderness of the mind. There were rules you lived by. Be kind, be generous, protect your family and your tribe, and they answered most of life's questions. The questions that remained: why a certain yellow bird in his neighborhood preferred hopping to flying, or why the sky was particularly beautiful at 4 in the morning, to name a couple. They likely had answers, but Simon didn't see any reason to seek them out. Life's little mysteries were there for lions to either appreciate or ignore. That was good enough for Simon. He started on his way into the ruinous graveyard, and as the crumbled heaps of stone and dirt slowly took over the horizon and the air turned thick and dusty, Simon put Nancy's insult out of his mind. He wasn't a freak. She was just a rude lioness. The graveyard helped convince him. It ran for miles, like one huge scar along the northern edge of the savannah, and betrayed any easy explanation. Building after building destroyed by the mysterious and elusive shadows. Simon touched his face. If he was a freak, then so was their land and their history. But no, it was just that the world was strange and unpredictable, and that bothered some lions. Simon resolved to stick to his rules and let others think whatever they wanted. The sun crept high into the sky, but the graveyard seemed to resist the light. Simon moved through the thick shadows, around shattered buildings which spread in every direction, and before long he was lost in daydreams. The heaps of stone became ancient mountains, while the crooked trees that managed to poke out here and there became pilgrims from distant lands, anxious to hear the mountains' stories. Simon passed brittle ruins of wood with long sun-bleached beams reaching towards the sky and pictured them draped with the flags of skeleton armies. He let the images wash over him, guide him, and draw him further into the graveyard. As afternoon settled into place, a crow flapped down and landed on a branch just above Simon's head. He stopped and looked up. The black animal bobbed back and forth, settled its feathers into a satisfactory order, and gurred contentedly. Simon smiled, and without thinking, reached up to touch it. His paw came within a few inches of the bird before it snapped at him and jumped to a higher branch, letting loose an annoyed caw. It bobbed back and forth again, but seemed discontent with its new perch. It gave another growl, then took off. Simon smiled and watched the angry bird drift from crooked leafless tree to crooked leafless tree, unable to recreate its earlier satisfaction. The young lion began to feel a little badly, but then he was struck by a curious realization. The trees, gnarled and ugly, that spotted the landscape. Simon had always had a strange appreciation for them, growing as they did in spite of the hard, barren soil. They seemed to play by their own rules, which he admired. But watching the crow flit from one to the next, Simon saw a pattern emerge. It might have been his imagination, but the trees suddenly seemed to be growing in a specific order, with one twisted shape per pile of rubble, one tree for every fallen building. Simon got excited. He began running through the narrow corridors that wove between the wreckage, trying to verify what he thought he saw, but his excitement quickly waned. Most of the fallen structures were too big to see over or walk around, and only one tree in five was visible. He needed to find higher ground. Simon briefly considered climbing one of the bigger mountains, but thought better of it. The heaps of stone looked solid, but Simon knew that was no guarantee. The ruins were constantly settling. No, he needed a tall tree. The sun began to fall towards the western horizon, but Simon didn't notice. He was entranced by his newfound mission. A voice began to run through his head, reading an imaginary news story. Simon, son of Rahas, discovers the hidden mystery of the graveyard and the shadows. Crowds rejoice. He wove his way east in search of a tree large enough to hold his weight. The trees grew larger the further he progressed, but it was slow going. Still, his theory found more and more evidence along the way. One tree per fallen building. Simon was disconcerted by a few glaring exceptions, but his excited mind found ways to explain them. Two or three trees growing from a single pile meant that the ruins there had blended together, and if a pile was bare, its tree had clearly died. After another hour of running, Simon still hadn't found a tree big enough to hold his weight, or tall enough to give him a view of the landscape. He tripped over a cracked piece of slate and caught himself before he tumbled into a jagged pile of shattered bricks. Simon stood upright and cursed. He needed to pay better attention to his feet. Another crow, or perhaps the same one, cawed angrily in the distance behind Simon, and he turned to look back the way he had come. He sighed. The sun was setting. A powerful sense of reality swept over Simon, and he felt silly. What was he looking for out there? A pattern? Knowledge? A weapon to defeat the shadows, should they ever return? Simon rubbed his face with his rough paws. He was thinking nonsense. It was time to go home. Simon shook out his paws and was about to beat a shortcut south towards the savannah when something caught his eye. It looked like a black crack running through the sky, a skinny branch from a very tall tree just around the next corner of rubble. All doubts disappeared. Simon bounded around the corner, certain his theory would be proven and his tribe would be miraculously saved, and he almost tripped again. Standing there, still and silent, was the tall tree he had been looking for. But it wasn't alone. A round, three-story building also stood there, crazily draped over the tree like a ragged suit of armor. Its stone walls were patchy, but mostly intact, with strong, leafless tree limbs spilling out of its dark, open windows, holding the structure up. Simon caught his breath. The tree seemed to be growing from inside the building, supporting it in an awkward, zigzagging shape. Small patches of sky were visible through the walls, but it stood almost 40 feet tall nonetheless. Simon moved to get a closer look. His footsteps suddenly sounded very loud on the rocky soil. The front doors of the building were gone, and Simon nervously craned his neck in over the threshold. A light rain of dust was falling through the skeletal tower, highlighted in shafts of light that were pouring in through windows, cracks, and holes in the walls. The mighty tree was indeed growing up from inside the building, with its massive trunk lashed to the ground at the center of the tower by woody tentacles. Its branches had taken the place of the second and third story floors, leaving only a few thick beams and a couple patches of staircase behind. He couldn't be sure, but in the dim light, it looked like one of the remaining staircases led to a hatch or a door in the ceiling of the tower. Simon stepped back, away from the zigzag building. He tried not to think, not to consider. There were 1,000 questions at hand, but Simon didn't want to focus on them. He needed stillness. Flickering images of crumbling stone, splintering wood, dust, and darkness tried to weasel their way into his mind's eye, but he pushed them back. Simon held his breath and assumed a quiet, delicate trance. There was clearly something he had to do, and thinking about it wasn't going to help. He padded softly back into the building. Inside, the raining dust was the only sound. The heavy stone walls blocked out all the little noises of the graveyard, noises that Simon hadn't even noticed until they were gone. He looked up, and his route was mostly clear. The first few bits of determined staircase could get him to the second floor, or where the second floor had once been. He would then probably need to climb the tree a little ways, which seemed all right. There were a few thick, steady-looking limbs, and from there the path to the roof would reveal itself. Simon was sure of that. He moved to the beginning of the stairs, walking very slowly and trying not to breathe too hard. The ground was covered with a thick layer of the fine dust that was raining slowly from the ceiling, and his footsteps sounded very dry, like ancient whispers. The stairs were also covered, and Simon reached down to make sure they were made of wood and not just dust. His paw left a five-fingered print behind on the first step. It felt solid. Simon stepped up, distributing his weight onto four different stairs. He expected them to shake, or at least groan under his weight, but they didn't budge. The craftsmanship was obviously very good, and Simon briefly wondered if all the lion's buildings had been built so well, and if so, why had this one survived and not the others? Stepping over a couple missing stairs, Simon cautiously made his way up to where the staircase abruptly ended. He looked down and his stomach twisted. He was only 15 feet above the ground, but it was enough to feel unnatural. Steeling himself, he looked up for his next move. The remaining woodwork in the tower was thick and heavy. Simon was surprised at the size of a few wooden beams which had survived the invasion of the tree. They were easily twice the size of any Simon had ever seen. His imagination reeled. How old was that tower? Older than the shadows? After a moment, he decided on his route to the roof. He would follow one of the tree's thick limbs in towards its trunk. From there, he could climb up to one of the beams and follow that to the second set of stairs. Simon stepped out with one leg over a small gap and tested a long, sloping branch with his foot. It sunk a bit under his weight, but felt solid. Simon held his breath. Then, with a quick gasp, he hopped across the gap, putting all his weight on that single branch. It sunk dramatically, and Simon was thrown off balance. He reached out and grabbed another smaller branch, which snapped in a spray of dust. The limb he was standing on yawed to the left, scraping down along the stone wall above him and dislodged a large brick. Simon saw it fall as he crouched onto all fours and dug his claws into the wood. The brick hit the earth with a dry thud, and a cloud of dust erupted around it. Simon shut his eyes and waited for the rest of the building to come down around him, but as the dust below him slowly settled, he found himself strangely secure. The limb had stopped moving, and the eerie silence of the tower had returned. "This is the stupidest thing I've ever done," Simon whispered to himself. There was another thicker branch above his head, and Simon tentatively took it in his paws. Very slowly, he pulled himself up, expecting the branch he was standing on to spring back into place. It didn't budge, even as Simon lifted up both his feet. He didn't know if that was good or bad. Holding his breath, Simon moved along the more sturdy branch in towards the tree trunk. The dead silence of the tower was disconcerting. Simon felt like disaster might be stealthily approaching from every direction, and he couldn't hear it. He climbed up, staying as close to the trunk as possible. The black tree felt strong and sturdy, but for how long? About 30 feet in the air, Simon came to the long, dusty beam that had probably held the third-story floor in place a long time ago. It spanned the structure and appeared to be embedded into the stone walls themselves. So trusting the beams meant trusting the walls, Simon reasoned. Of course, trusting the walls really meant trusting the tree. He briefly imagined it growing up from underneath a fallen pile of rubble, pushing the building back up into place. The tree had some strange purpose. That much was clear. Simon stepped onto the beam. It held, as he somehow knew it would, and he crept slowly to the second staircase, leaving a trail of footsteps in the dust behind him. The second set of stairs felt solid, like the first. Again, Simon expected a creak or a groan, but the wood was thick and firmly rooted to the stone wall. He looked to the ceiling. Unlike most of the building, the roof had somehow repelled the advances of the black tree. The tree's larger branches steered away from the ceiling, but myriad smaller branches sprouted up and spilled over it like smoke. Simon pushed a few aside to reveal the small hatch he had seen from the ground. The delicate branches shattered into dry clouds of dust at his touch. Simon coughed. The hatch was made from a hard golden wood, striped with streaks of dark brown, and appeared tightly sealed with the ceiling. Simon gave a hesitant push. The hatch didn't budge, although Simon thought he felt the stair beneath him move a little bit. He dropped his paw and breathed deeply. His nerves were getting the better of him. Simon rubbed his eyes. They felt hot and dry. And then, without giving himself a chance to think about it, he pushed at the hatch again, harder. It didn't move. He pushed once more, harder. Nothing. Simon's face began to sweat and his vision blurred. "You're going to open," he whispered, his legs tensed. "You're going to..." He dropped his arms and balled his paws into fists. "Open," Simon shouted, and lunged up, slamming his fists against the dark brown wood as hard as he could. The hatch flew out of its seat with a hollow pop, and a rush of night air flooded into the building. A dust storm erupted around Simon, hundreds of tiny dead twigs bursting apart in the wind. Simon clamped his eyes shut and reached up blindly. His paws found the exposed ledge where the hatch had been, and he jumped, pulling himself through the opening. Simon scraped his way up using his claws and flung his legs over the ledge. The evening air was cold but clear. He paused for a second to wipe the dust off his face and out of his eyes, then stood up. The sun had almost sunk beneath the wall to the west, but the remaining orange light hit Simon strong in the face. It felt wonderful, and he let the color and the wind sweep over him. He had made it. The roof of the zigzag building was covered with a thick layer of gravel, which crunched beneath Simon's feet. He walked closer to the edge, appreciating the sound. Instantly, the building beneath him took on a new character. No longer dead and whispery, it became triumphant, the solitary victor of some impossible trial. Standing at the edge of the tower, Simon felt like he was flying. The Lion's Land was shaped like a thumb, bordered by wide rivers. To his left, Simon could see the stretch of savanna that shared space with the graveyard, and beyond that, the Southern River. Behind him, the savanna continued on alone, all the way to the horizon. Simon had hoped maybe he would be able to see where it ended, but it appeared as limitless as always. To his right, Simon saw the Northern River, and directly in front of him was the Wall, which cut off the narrow tip of the Lion's Land, stretching for almost a mile between the two rivers. Simon sighed. Even from that height, it all looked frustratingly familiar, with solid boundaries to the south, west, and north, and an empty infinity to the east. If he thought about it too hard, the land became like a cell, cutting him off from something. Simon shook his head. He had climbed to the top of the tower for a reason. He lay down at the edge of the roof and examined the tumbling ruins of the graveyard below him. The light was growing dim, but it didn't bother Simon. He could see in almost pitch blackness and was able to pick out the gnarled trees among the wreckage easily. At first, his theory seemed sound. There was definitely a pattern of trees below him. But as much as he wanted to see one tree per building, that wasn't the case. Some piles had no trees, while some had three or four. He even saw one mountain of debris that had seven trees growing up from its center in an orderly, circular arrangement. Simon was puzzled. Someone had clearly planted the trees, but why? Was it some cruel joke of the shadows? Were they marking their victories over the lions with spindly black imitations of smoke? Or perhaps the defeated lions had hoped the trees would push their buildings back up into place, like the one beneath him? Simon shook his head. His imagination was only frustrating things. A small brown spider scurried under Simon's paw. He looked down at it. "What do you think, little spider?" he asked. The furry creature paused as if considering, then scampered back onto the roof and retreated down the side of the building. Simon sighed. He had no gift for riddles. His original theory was undone, and while the trees below him might have had some hidden meaning, it was beyond him. The more he thought about it, the more elaborate and unlikely his ideas became. Maybe the trees were shadows, frozen in time. Or maybe some magical bird had planted the trees. Simon shook the dust out of his mane aggressively. It itched. Maybe his father would have some ideas. Simon made his way down from the roof of the tower easily. His nerves were calm, or perhaps numb, and he remembered which branches were steady. He stepped back onto the narrow path that wove through the graveyard. He didn't like it, leaving the building behind, along with an elusive secret that he was sure held some importance. A crow cawed in the distance, and Simon frowned. He was tired of crows and their complaints. Walking slowly, he found a route that took him south, towards the savanna. Before long, its long grasses appeared in a gap between two tall rows of stone, and Simon quickened his pace. He was ready to be done with stone and dust and destruction. The shadows had bested his ancestors. Why should he be any different? Simon was about to emerge into the open savanna when something darted across the narrow gap in the wreckage. He jumped back, caught by surprise. A little ways off, he saw grasses swaying in the wind, but they made no sound he could hear. He caught his breath and sniffed the air. All he could smell was dirt and stone. Probably a gazelle, Simon thought to himself, but that did little to ease his mind. His imagination was still in overdrive, and he couldn't help but picture one of the toothy black snakes he sometimes saw in his dreams. He crept forward and peeked his head around the corner of the gap. Oh, a voice called right in front of him, and Simon stumbled backward towards the rubble. Back, Shadow, he cursed, and let out an unpracticed roar as his left foot sunk between two large stones. Simon's leg twisted, and he buckled over to his left. He reached out to break his fall, but before his paws found solid ground, his head met a large plank of wood with a thwack. He vaguely heard someone yell as the world went fuzzy, and he crumbled the rest of the way to the ground. The voice called out again, and Simon looked up to see a shape hovering above him. Its outline was dark and blurred, and its voice was lost amidst a powerful ringing sound. He blinked once, and it was gone. Simon felt one of the stones lift off his foot and a set of claws tighten around his arm. They tugged, and he lamely roared again, pulling back and righting himself against a low brick wall. Slowly, the voice became clear over the ringing in his head, a soft laughter. Simon blinked hard and tried to focus. He saw a small figure standing in front of him. It was indistinct, but after a moment, he realized it was a lioness. As the world became clear once more, Simon's face flushed with embarrassment. He recognized her. They went to school together. I'm sorry, the lioness said through her gentle laughter. Are you all right? Simon put a paw to his head where the plank had struck him. He could feel his heartbeat through the skin, but he thought his pride was hurt more than his head. Yeah, he said. I think so. Are you sure? The lioness asked. That was quite a fall. He looked over her head toward the savannah. The sky was quickly turning purple, and a few leafy trees in the distance cut striking silhouettes into the evening sky. The air was getting colder. I think so, he said, looking back down. Sorry. I'm Simon. He lifted his paw to shake. The lioness smiled. I know, she said, and scratched her ear lightly before taking his paw. My name's Arya. They shook. You know? Simon began, then noticed two shapes moving through the grass behind her. The vision of the oily black shadow snake flashed through his mind again. Arya frowned and turned. Two more lionesses emerged from the savannah on all fours, one with a dead mongoose in her mouth. They both spied Simon and stopped. Oh, Arya said, looking back at Simon. These are my friends. Simon rubbed the back of his neck and nodded to the two lionesses. He felt like a complete fool. Hi, he called. I'm Simon. The lionesses both frowned at each other, and the one without the mongoose let a tiny giggle escape. The other quickly shot her a scowl and stood up, slinging the mongoose over her shoulder. Assuming a confident air, she walked forward and took Arya by the shoulders. A pleasure, Simon, she said. I see you've met Arya, daughter of Hina, and I am Jasmine, daughter of Anna. Oh, and that's Reba, daughter of Loas, over there. Reba waved awkwardly, still struggling to stifle her giggles. And who might your family be? Jasmine asked. Jasmine, stop it, Arya whispered, and pushed the other lioness back. What? Jasmine asked, sounding offended. Simon looked back into the graveyard. It suddenly seemed like the safest place in the world. I'm Simon, son of Rahas, he mumbled. Interesting. Jasmine called out to the evening sky as she turned and started west toward the village. She pulled Reba along, whose eyes were watering with the effort of staying quiet. We were just walking home, Simon, son of Rahas, she called over her shoulder. Care to join us? Simon blushed. The ringing in his head got louder, and he rubbed the spot where the plank had hit him. The two lionesses sauntered away, and he briefly considered staying there and sleeping in the savannah. His parents would kill him, of course, but that was perhaps his best option. Something warm touched his arm. Come on, Arya said gently, and squeezed his wrist before pulling back. Walk with us. She was able to look up at him, but only for a second. She scratched her other ear, then fell onto all fours and trotted away. All right, Simon said, without hearing himself speak. He stood there and watched her walk away for a second, mesmerized. She looked strong, and he distantly noticed that the ringing in his head had disappeared. After a few yards, Arya turned back to Simon and she smiled. "Are you coming?" she asked. Simon's eyes shot back to the purple savanna, and he tripped as he moved to catch up. He cursed softly to himself, coming to her side, and tried to keep his eyes on where they were going.
"So, what were you doing in there?"
Arya asked, after they had been walking for a few minutes. The two lionesses in front of them were engrossed in some kind of repartee that sounded muted and unintelligible to Simon's ears. Meanwhile, the savanna crickets sounded particularly loud, along with his footsteps and the footsteps of the lioness walking next to him. He said, and instantly forgot the question. His face was hot, all of it besides the three long scars.
"Sorry, what?"
he asked.
"The graveyard," Arya asked, absently rubbing her nose. "What were you doing in there?"
"Oh," Simon said. He had no idea how to answer the question.
Looking at trees?
As soon as he said it, 15 other, better answers popped into his head. He began to silently curse each one of them for being so late, as he waited for Arya's inevitable laughter. It never came. Simon looked down at the petite lioness and his stomach tightened. Her face had become constricted and sad. She glanced up at him and nodded solemnly.
"I understand,"
she said. Simon didn't.
"You like trees?"
he asked, slouching as much as he could. Arya shrugged.
"Well, there are a few in there that I like very much," she said. "My great uncle, my grandfather."
She trailed off. Simon looked to his right at the looming piles of debris. He couldn't see any of the gnarled black trees, but their shapes were painted clearly into his mind. None of them reminded him of lions.
"What do you mean?" he asked.
Arya looked up at him, confused.
"Sorry, what were you talking about? Didn't you mean the builder's trees? The graves?"
Simon stopped. The realization swept over him like a parade of loud images marching through his mind's eye. He saw lion builders slaving away, cutting wood and laying stone. He saw their sweat-soaked manes, their gritty paws, and their proud faces. But then, just as it sometimes happened in his dreams, Simon watched one, then two, then 100 slick and oily creatures invade the scene. Their black teeth didn't shine. They sucked the light and life out of the air, and Simon imagined his tribe trying to fight them back. Those lions would have been fierce, but in the end, they always lost, and their buildings always fell. Simon saw the shadows slink away, smiling and triumphant, and with that, he had the answer to his riddle. Broken paws poking up from beneath the rubble. A tree for every fallen builder.